I'm away? Or can I snap aerial photographs using my old kite and a disposable camera? Okay, it's possible those are not actually the most pressing questions, but they're still ideas that might catch the attention of anyone who has a well-stocked toolbox and a curiosity about how technology works. Now the folks at Make Magazine are launching a TV show on public television. It airs Saturdays at 5:30 locally on WETA Channel 26. You can check out the TV show and a bunch of other links about what we're about to talk about at makezine.tv/episodes. We've got a link to that at our website, kojoshow.org. And joining us to talk about it are John Park. He is the host of Make Television, and Dale Doherty, the editor and publisher of Make Magazine. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being here.
Hi, Rebecca.
Thanks for having us.
And you can join the conversation at 800-433-8850 or send us email, kojo@wamu.org. So I want to introduce our listeners a little bit to this kind of society of do-it-yourselfers. And I suppose it's getting less informal, but it has been for a long time an informal network of people who trade ideas about cool projects, and they're the targets for Make Magazine. Dale Doherty, how would you describe them?
Well, I think there's a lot of people that that make things of all kinds and for all reasons. But what we've, in some ways, you could think in traditional areas like cooking and gardening, there are DIY people, there are DIY magazines in that area. We tended to focus a bit on technology and people that were kind of using technology in lots of different ways, not just buying it, but taking it apart and looking, understanding how it works and putting it back together and to create sort of new applications and do new things. And again, we have a really broad sense of what technology is. As you mentioned, kites are kind of technology. You know, rockets are technology. As our iPods and digital cameras. So we're kind of looking at a scope of things that are really kind of very present in our lives, and what we've kind of tied into is a spirit of tinkering that maybe previous generations also had, where they understood how things worked and they put them back, or they made them work the way they want to. And that's the kind of primary idea behind Make, is that you have your own ideas of what you want or what you want something to do, and how do you make that possible?
Well, it's sort of a combination of gearheads who like to know how things work and add a pretty healthy dose of environmentalism and reusing material that might be thrown away otherwise. And then I got to say, there seems to be this sort of undercurrent of kind of sticking it to the man, you know, like you can't tell me exactly how to use that piece of technology. I'm going to use it completely differently.
Yeah, exactly. But I think, you know, partly we've seen this in areas like software and on the internet, where people take something and transform it by their use. And it actually, look at cars and things like the hot rods. You know, there were people that took the sort of the basic parts of a car and transformed it into something that was not only, you know, functioned differently, but was aesthetically quite interesting. So we see that, you know, ultimately this is a form of expressing something about yourself and connecting to other people who do the same thing. So essentially hobbyists and enthusiasts connect over and in and around the things they make.
And
yeah, Rebecca, yeah. you say this sort of element of sticking it to the man, and almost I feel it's more that people are realizing that we've been kind of taught to avoid figuring things out and pulling them apart, and people are more just rebelling against that and saying, well, why should that be the case?
Well, also it demystifies a lot of things that seem sort of scary on their surface, like, say, electricity. I mean, I put together these little blinky bugs with my kids, which is this incredibly simple project with a watch battery and pipe cleaners and a couple LEDs. And you do need to complete the circuit, but it was really easy to do. And it, instead of being intimidated by building an electronic toy, when you break it down into its component parts, it was a lot easier than, you know, a lot of jigsaw puzzles are.
Yeah, that's a great point. I do a lot of projects with my kids, and I'm so proud that their first response to things breaking, toys breaking, because they do have a lot of electronic toys that make a lot of noise, is to, hey, let's fix it, or hey, let's take it apart, or even change it, which is the spirit, not to just think of it as something disposable.
Well, I also do want to get to the VCR cat feeder, because we've now teased it enough that I'm guessing our audience is intrigued. And this is taking obsolete technology. And it was on one of the first episodes of Make Television. Is that right, John?
Yeah, it's the first episode, and it was really one of the seminal projects from the magazine. It was one of the earliest projects in the magazine that people really grabbed a hold of and identified with the magazine. And at its core, it's looking at this thing that's junk. No one really seems to use their VCRs anymore. I don't use mine. If you take this piece of junk and look at what it can do, it's got a timer that you can schedule. You can tell it to go off every day, at least if you've ever learned how to program it, which maybe not everyone has. But if you know how to program your VCR, you can tell it to, say, go off for 5 minutes every day at 10 o'clock. What's happening inside, if you rip the lid off, is you see a motor spin. So this VCR cat feeder project was born out of looking at this thing that had already been really well engineered to spin a motor once a day for a couple of minutes, and saying, what can I do with that? How can I reuse that for something I want or need? And so the motor then is used to drive a series of pulleys to get enough torque, enough force to turn this little hopper full of cat food, which then dumps the food out into the kitty's bowl. So you could build your own cat feeder for just the junk that's sitting in your garage.
And if you're not getting a mental image of this, go to kojoshow.org, where you can actually see John building this unbelievable VCR cat feeder. And Dale Doherty, the last time you were here on the Kojo Show, you talked about an aerial photography project that involved the kite we mentioned earlier. What can you tell us about that?
Well, that's actually probably in the second or third episode of Make TV. The creator of it is Chris Benton, who is a professor of architecture at University of California at Berkeley. And he originally started, his interest started from the point of trying to get aerial views of buildings. But when you shoot from an airplane, you're looking straight down, and he wanted to look at it at angles. So he started experimenting with attaching a camera rig to a kite and flying it 200 to 500 feet in the air to take pictures of buildings. And then it developed from there that he began just developing the craft of aerial photography. And again, there's entire communities of people out there based on this, different kinds of rigs for different kinds of cameras. But the essential thing is combining two things that most people enjoy is flying a kite and taking pictures. The benefit here is you get some really unusual pictures of things that you don't get from, you know, 6 feet, above the ground.
If you have the impulse to take stuff apart, or you've come up with a really cool project from something in your garage, or if you've got something sitting around that you know has a second life in it but want some advice about what you think you want to do with it, give us a call, 800-433-8850, or send us email at kojo@wamu.org. We are talking with John Park and Dale Doherty from Make Magazine and the new Make Television series. We are going to take a quick break, but we will be back with more about Make TV after this short break. I'm Rebecca Roberts. You're listening to the Kojo Namdi Show.
WAMU 88.5 is proud to be the media sponsor for Benny Golson at 80 in the Eisenhower Theater at the Kennedy Center Saturday evening at 7:30. The Kennedy Center salutes the 60-year career of saxophonist and NEA jazz master Benny Golson in a concert hosted by Danny Glover. More information is at WAMU.org under calendar.
Next time on Tell Me More, the inauguration of the 44th President, Barack Obama, brought more than a million Americans to the nation's capital. We hear from political and faith leaders about this historic moment. I'm Michelle Martin. I look forward into this new era in American politics next time on Tell Me More.
That's on Tell Me More at 2 here on WAMU 88.5.
For amber rays of the rain. I've been standing here On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Rivers Cuomo, the lead singer and principal songwriter of the band Weezer. He's just released his second volume of home recordings. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Now maybe we're all through, or we've just begun, but there's just one thing I need to
know. That's Fresh Air, coming up at 3 here on WAMU 88.5. Sunny skies this afternoon. Our temperatures will be in the low 30s today. Let's return to the discussion on the Kojo Namdi Show.
Welcome back. I'm Rebecca Roberts, sitting in for Kojo Namdi. I'm talking with John Park, host of Make Television, and Dale Doherty, editor and publisher of Make Magazine. And let me say again, a lot of what we're talking about is pretty visual, so go to kojoshow.org for links to get an idea of some of what we're talking about. And if you have some DIY projects you're working on or questions about something you think these guys can help with, join us at 800-433-8850 or email kojo@wamu.org. We have an email from Phil in Washington, D.C., who says, it's great to see the folks from Make Television and Magazine are going to be on your show. I've got my newsstand copy of Make Magazine right here. It's got lots of cool stuff, including a story about how to use a boombox as an electronics lab. I'm delaying errands just to stay home and hear the show. Hardware hacking is a great way to make use of technology that would normally be thrown away but shouldn't. My own pet projects include a web-based clearinghouse called the CyberMax LCD Project, where I've collected information on the surplus video circuitry that was sold off when the maker of the CyberMax virtual reality headset went out of business. Go Phil.
Yeah. You know, that's the beauty of this. Usually, you know, Make is really made up of a community of people that make these things. And when you talk to them, they always start talking about the projects they're working on. And it's just such a delight to discover what people are doing. And most of the time, you know, it's not something they talk about with everyone. And it's the, you know, just we go around and people come up, and pretty soon they're engaged in conversation about what they do, not just what's in the magazine.
And it's an incredibly collaborative community. I've found that posting questions up on the website or in the forums of Make generate these incredible brainstorming sessions of things that people want to build. I recently got an old broken mid-century modern TV console, big wooden box, kind of a piece of furniture, and I think I got 30, 40 responses from people of ideas of projects for putting an aquarium in there or rebuilding it as an LCD panel media center. So it's a really fun community in that these people are so excited to share their ideas and help each other.
Well, in that spirit, let's hear from Sue in Arlington, Virginia. Sue, welcome to the program.
Hi, this is like a really neat show. I never heard of your magazine or your show before, and I'm definitely going to look into both of them. But my question is sadly, it's very, very low tech. But I have, I think like most people, I've got a whole bunch of cords coming out of my entertainment center and out of my computer, like, you know, cord for the TiVo box, a cord for the television, the stereo, all that stuff. And it's so ugly. There's nothing that I can do about it aesthetically to kind of hide those cords and make it, you know, at least not, you know, apparent that there are just, you know, 8 million cords coming out of the back of my entertainment center. And so I was wondering if you guys had any kind of solution or idea of what I can do to hide them.
I'm right there with you, actually. I have that same ugly mass of cords, unfortunately.
Okay.
I have seen there's a lot of products out for people who do car stereo installations that are these sort of wire spiral looms, kind of looks like an old telephone cord. And if you can wrangle a big group of those cords together and wrap that stuff around it, at least you have this one giant sort of umbilical coming out instead of a thousand different wires. That might be a place to look.
Yeah, that's right. And people are increasingly sort of building custom cabinets or other things in a sense to create, direct all those cords behind, you know, through an opening and then down behind it to reduce some of the visual clutter. But it is funny. I mean, it's kind of no matter how wireless we all are, we come down to lots of power cords and lots of things that are connecting into the electrical grid.
Let's hear from Miriam in Bethesda. Miriam, welcome to the program.
Yes, hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
My my question is, as we go through more and more generations of cell phones and companies keep getting us to upgrade, I'm sure a lot of us have, you know, two or three old ones sitting at home. I know some of them can be donated to programs for, you know, people in need, but I'm wondering if there are other projects that you guys have come up with that make for using that technology for something else.
Oh, that's an excellent question. The main thing I've seen people do is reuse the screens. Those little screens, especially I think in old Nokia phones, pop up all over the place on the web in people's projects. So if you want to get involved with some sort of hacking of hardware that has a little display, people are usually pretty eager to get a hold of those screens. So you might look around to see if you can donate yours to those people or even try to dive into that kind of a project.
You know, another point is that I think we need to rethink product design so that we're not coming up with a new cell phone every year. Someone mentioned in a talk the other, what would it mean to create a 100-year-old cell phone? You know, what would it, how would you think differently of that? And really to imagine the product life cycle, even from the manufacturer's point of view, of something that, you know, isn't just, you know, headed to the landfill. What becomes of this device and why, you know, someone like Nokia or Apple is creating so many millions of these on a monthly basis.
Well, you know, yeah, with that kind of planned obsolescence and the expectation that there's going to be a lot of obsolete equipment, how receptive have you found electronics companies are with your tinkering? Do they like that you're taking their stuff apart?
You know, I mean, they don't speak with one voice or necessarily come to us and share their opinions. You know, I think some of them are almost from a product liability point of view, concerned about people taking things apart. Getting beyond that, I think, you know, that there has been a move, you know, over the last 20 years towards no user serviceable parts inside, and and we're kind of against that. So I think, you know, one thing that we do is we demonstrate, you know, just again, like people hack software, they're hacking hardware to reuse it in different ways. So if even a Dell computer or something goes out and sees what, you know, 10-year-old machines are being used for, I think they'd be quite amazed. And again, it means this machine is serving some purpose. It's not being thrown away.
Let's hear from Jordan in Alexandria. Jordan, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks.
Sure.
I have a project I'm working on. I'm hoping you guys can help me with. I had a bike stolen last year, and it really kind of made me mad. So I have this scheme I have, this little caper I want to do about putting one of those pay-as-you-go cell phones in the bicycle seat, and it's GPS-capable. And I've heard you can actually get software on it that will send over the Internet a signal to your computer where the bike is. Now, my question, however, is I also wanted to put a fun buzzer on it so I could actually call the cell phone and make it ring really loud from a really high whenever I wanted to. So what I've done is I've taken apart the cell phone and removed the little vibrator motor, and I don't know how to get the voltage from the vibrator motor to up the voltage to something like a little siren.
Right. So you want to look into how relays work? And a relay is basically a switch that can get thrown by a tiny little voltage, which is what you have coming off of where that little motor used to be, and it opens the gate for an enormous voltage. So I would go online and look for some of the electronic projects websites.
I'll also add Luke Eisman in Austin, Texas, is working on a similar project, and he put the cell phone inside his water bottle, you know, and put that into the bike. And his solution, instead of the buzzer, actually was to run electrical current up the handlebars.
Oh, wow.
And be able to give you a little the
But Luke is nuts, and we don't condone that.
Good luck, Jordan.
I appreciate it.
Sounds like a great project.
It does. I love the idea of giving the bike thief a big buzzer in the seat. We have a call from Judy in Lovettsville, Virginia. Judy, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you. Listen, this is one of my pet peeves. At least here in Loudoun County, Virginia, there is no way to recycle those clear bottles in which pills come in. And I've got, you know, years worth around here because I don't know what to do with them. Any suggestions?
You might look for an artist who's interested in doing an art project that involves lots and lots of bottles.
Yeah, I actually saw on a link through the Make Magazine website on Instructables a lamp you can make from pill bottles and worn out windshield wipers.
Yeah, but I don't want to make a lamp.
Well, fair enough. It wasn't the most attractive
lamp. Well, you
decide
what you want to make with it. You should find your own project that you want to build with it.
Well, first of all, I don't want to spend the time doing it. I got other things to do with my time. There must be somebody who can use these things.
Well, Judy, if we find one, we'll let you know. Thanks for your call. As far as the TV show goes, and again, it airs 5:30 on Saturdays on WETA, do you find that it's a different audience, or that it's more easily approachable for non-techies when you've got the video involved?
Well, yeah, I think we don't know yet because we just started, but I do believe that the show essentially has two parts. One is a profile of a maker or a group of makers, and that's like a documentary on how they do things, what they do, and why they do it. And I think that's very accessible to anybody. It's very interesting. Makers are really fascinating people, and it's what I'm so happy about the show. It features them as really the fascinating people they are. Yeah, and then John's segment is sort of the equivalent of a cooking show segment, where he walks through a project and shows you how to do it. And not everybody does the projects, but you learn even by seeing the recipe, if you will, seeing someone make something. How in the case of the cat feeder, how the motor works inside a VCR and how to tap into it.
I want to play a clip of John building something, and then I'll explain it what it is in a second.
Today, I'm going to show you how to build a burrito blaster. This is an air cannon that can shoot any kind of food, bratwurst, hot dogs, even T-shirts and confetti, into the stands at the ballpark. Now, you might be familiar with some of its relatives. This is a combustion-powered spud gun right here. And you can launch potatoes, yams, really any kind of starchy tuber at high speeds. Now, over here, I've got a monster of a T-shirt cannon. Look at that. This thing has four chambers of air and can shoot a T-shirt into the top of the bleachers at the ballpark. Our design is a bit simpler. It uses three main sections. This is the air reservoir. It gets filled with compressed air. Next section is the solenoid valve and trigger. This is what dumps the air into the final section, the barrel. Now, the barrel is a muzzle loader, so we'll put the food down the end here and tamp it in with a stick. Let's go ahead and make it.
So, John, I'm not going to suggest there's an enormous audience of people whose lives are less rich because they don't have a burrito blaster at home.
That's where you're wrong. Everyone needs one. Just ask my kids.
So, what are you learning?
This project, first off, is just some, like Dale mentioned, some of the skills of how do you work with PVC, how do you cut it and join it. There's a particular solvent welding technique you use. So there's a technique aspect, and then there's a sort of bigger question of how do you get a bunch of compressed air in a chamber to dump very quickly over to the other side. Our answer to that is it's a sprinkler valve from a lawn sprinkler system, and now you're getting people to look at this thing that they have in their lives in a new way, and now they have sort of that understanding of how you might solve a problem with something that's already been engineered for a different purpose, but you can reuse it for what you want. And we build a little simple circuit, a little trigger that uses 3 9-volt batteries to fire that valve, and then the discussion continues actually on the web. I posted recently on the Make blog about how that solenoid valve works on the inside, so details that we can't get to in the show we put up there so that people who are interested in exploring more about it can find out what they want to know.
Well, I have to say that one of the things I was really impressed with was kind of the levels of knowledge you can gain from some of these depending on the age or skill of the person. I mean, even just building these little blinky bugs with my kids who are little, you know, they don't need to know an enormous amount about electronics, but they do understand that the eyes on the bug only light up when the wires touch each other, and that's learning about completing a circuit.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's terrific. They've just learned kind of the fundamental thing about a circuit, and they'll carry that on and take it further if they want.
Let's hear from Lynn in Fairfax. Lynn, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. I'm responding to the caller who asked about recycling her pillboxes.
Oh, great.
I know in Fairfax County, some of the recyclers do accept them. We just put them in with the rest of our cans and bottles and so forth. And so if there were a way for her to get in touch with someone in Fairfax County or for me to get in touch with her and try to get her in touch with the people who do that kind of recycling, you know, I don't know that we could get a company to necessarily start including Loudoun County, but we might be able to get somebody to just pick up her bottles and bottles from other people like her. There are lots of people with lots of pill bottles, and we could then get them recycled.
Lynn, thanks for your call. I'm going to put you on hold so that we might make all of that happen in some sort of organized way. We also have an email from Patty who says, I had a Sony PDA, and when the battery died, I was told it could only be replaced by a Sony technician. I wasn't going to pay for that, so I found a compatible battery on a third-party website. It was incredibly simple to open the device and replace the battery. I find it outrageous when companies try to force people to go to a technician for something that I can do myself. I imagine you guys hear a lot
Patty.
Of that.
Yeah,
that's great. We have a thing called the Maker's Bill of Rights that we try to use to promote products that have characteristics that you can open them, that you can find replacement parts, and there's no obfuscation of, you know, how to get them and where to get them.
How does the miniaturization of technology play into that? Is it making things harder?
Yeah, I think that the impulse to remix technology, to take something and use it in a slightly different way, comes from that almost magical quality of, I can't open up an iPod and really do much with it. There are people who can, but I'm not an electrical engineer. I can't get in there and change the way it works internally on a fundamental level. But I can take that and extend it in some way. We have there's a maker named Mr. Jalopy who took his iPod and built it into an enormous old stereo cabinet and added a little computer to rip CDs directly to it, gave it an interface, and made it just a beautiful object, even though he wasn't going to go in and alter the device because it is so sub-miniaturized, like you say. He took the outputs that Apple gave us and used those in an interesting way.
Let's take a call from Ron in Washington. Ron, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a couple of small kids, and a lot of electronic things, and I'm always fixing things, and I catch a lot of grief for it, mostly from, you know, my wife, because she has she sort of shares the common belief that, you know, use things up, it doesn't work, it's cheaper to throw it away. But, you know, I find that a lot of things that I buy don't really work right out of the box, or don't, you know, a lot of the tinkering has to do with sometimes just tightening screws and whatnot. But I find that in front of the children, when I make things, and the way I think about it, when I articulate it, my kids are, you know, kindergarten age, when I articulate that, I get past the naming of what it is I need, you know, pliers, it could be anything that can tweeze things up. And they get interested in that, and then their brains start to work in ways that are – it's wonderful to look at. And I'm going to get to my point.
Well, that's already a good point already, Ron, yeah. And I applaud you for that, because that's exactly what I'm doing with my kids that age, is making them understand that we don't just need to throw stuff away or put up with it the way it is.
Of course. And we heard yesterday in Hargrove's speech about restoring science. Well, you know, science can be baking soda and vinegar, you know, spewing out of some kind of upside-down funnel, and there's your volcano. And, my God, you know, their eyes get wide. And then the next thing you know they're working for NASA.
Yeah, well, yesterday Obama's talk, he said, you know, it's been the risk takers, the doers, the makers of things. And I got lots of nice email from people who said they smiled when they heard that, you know, because it made them think of you know, just in simple ways. a lot of people who do that stuff, it's not often recognized, but it is how we kind of start down a path to innovate and to perhaps even have a career in science and technology.
That's Dale Dougherty, editor and publisher of Make Magazine. We also heard from John Park, host of Make Television. I'm Rebecca Roberts, sitting in on the Kojo Namdi Show. Thank you so much for joining us.